Mike Evans over his career. And another one to the list. Tampa the lead from the 19. Jones to the end zone. It is caught. Touchdown. Golden Tate holds it in.
Well, the Monday Night Football game ended up being a little bit more interesting than people thought. The Buccaneers favored heavily to beat the Giants. And the Giants there, you heard the touchdown pass from Daniel Jones to Golden Tate. Giants went for two. Had a running back open in a flat front part of the end zone. The quarterback threw the ball late. Defender got there simultaneously with the ball. Initially, it was called pass interference. And then the officials decided to pick up the flag with 28 seconds to go. And thus, the Buccaneers win to improve to 6-2. 25-23 was the final last night. And the Giants fall to, I think it's 1-7 now. So tough break for Giants fans, although they're not really going anywhere this year, as we know. And the Buccaneers pick up an important win. Did not play great, but played well enough to win. Welcome to the Sports Ticket. Wade Gerstner with you. Let's jump into it. Local sports, not necessarily local sports per se here, but it is pertaining to a local tie to our area. Due to COVID-19 cases amongst the Dodge City High School football program, Friday's 6A playoff game at Lawrence High has been forfeited. Lawrence High will automatically advance to the 6A quarterfinals. That determined by the Dodge City School Administration because of various positive tests there within the program and the school. So Dodge City is forfeiting their second-round game in the Class 6A playoffs. Their head coach is David Foster. And if that name sounds familiar, it should. Darwin called and told me that that was a classmate of his at Beloit High, and he graduated Beloit High back in 1990, the head coach of Dodge City. He was a quarterback on the football team, I was told. So David Foster used to go to school right here in North Central Kansas, a Beloit High grad from 1990, I've been told, and a quarterback in the football team. He's been the head coach of Dodge City for a while. He's done a really good job out there. But unfortunately, COVID-19 ends Dodge City's season. They were 4-5 on the year and would have been a heavy underdog against Lawrence, who was the number one seed in the 6-8 playoffs, but they will not get to have a chance at pulling off the upset. So there is another forfeit when it comes to football playoffs. Of course, Valley Heights had to forfeit a first-round playoff game last week, and Arma Northeast, a team that won, I think, either zero or one game all year long, moved on to the second round of the playoffs, and I would guess that we'll probably have at least a few more teams between now and the end of the playoff season in football in high school in the state of Kansas that will have to forfeit because of COVID-19. But we shall see, as cases seem to be on the rise, not only in the Midwest and in the country, but also starting to rise in our area. Smith County now with 18 active cases. Cloud County has a lot of active cases. I think it was 63 or 65 I read earlier. Russell County has 25 active cases. So there's, you know, you do have to sit here and wonder if we're going to get through the football playoffs or not. And I think we might eventually. It's just a matter of how many forfeits are you going to have. 20 new cases in Washington County, 4 new cases in Republic County, 3 more cases in Mitchell County on the latest, and Cloud County, 20 new cases just identified yesterday, and they have 63 cases that are active. So that's Cloud, Smith, Mitchell, Republic County. I don't have, and I told you about Smith County now, 18 active cases, and don't know the update from Osborne. We don't get those too often, and they post at times on social media on Facebook about their situation, and then Lincoln County, don't know the numbers there, or in Jewell County, last I saw was 4 active cases in Jewell County. So there are cases in their area, and whether or not it affects the school activities and sports and the football playoffs, we shall see. So, God willing, we'll have football playoffs coming up on Friday. It will be Beloit at Phillipsburg on KD Country 94 and KD Country 94.com. Live video stream at NCKSSports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. Pregame at 6:30, kickoff at 7. A rematch of a game played in Week 5. Phillipsburg won 49-28. That score misleading. Beloit had 5 turnovers in the game. Phillipsburg scored on the final play of the game. Beloit was down, though, 30-6 at halftime. So Beloit's looking forward to a rematch against Phillipsburg. And St. John's Tipton, 7-2 on the year, will host Frankfurt. Frankfurt's 5-1. Of course, played the first game in about 3 weeks. Last week in a win over Lakeside, St. John's Tipton rolling Onega 50-14. That'll be in Beloit. We'll have the call. Dusty will have the call on Z96.3 Lake and KatieCountry94.com coming up on Friday with pregame at 6:30. Kickoff at 7. Sylvan Lucas will be in action at Victoria coming up on Friday at 7 o'clock in the second round of the playoffs, a team they lost to early in the year. And Smith Center, a team that pummeled Elsaline early in the year. Gets a rematch against Elsaline. I believe that one's at 7 o'clock on Friday at Smith Center in Class 1A. Smith Center had a first round bye. For a complete look at the football brackets and more, visit NCKSSports.com. We'll have high school football locker room chats for you. Coming up tomorrow evening, we'll talk to the football coaches of Beloit Osborne Smith Center in Thunder Ridge at about 5:15. Also, St. John's Tipton, Lakeside, Rock Hills, and Sylvan Lucas. And if you missed any of those locker room shots, you can go back and listen to them via our podcast page at our website, kdcountry94.com. All right, so the question that we have here, we're going to talk some NFL today. We haven't spent a lot of time on the NFL in general. We've obviously talked about the Chiefs each week when they play, and we've talked about their division a little bit. But what about the landscape of the National Football League right now? And the first question is, are the Buccaneers the best team in the NFC? Let's start there. Are the Buccaneers the best team in the NFC? Based on the records, they are the second best team. Seattle 6-1, Tampa Bay 6-2, Arizona's 5-2, Green Bay's 5-2, the Saints are 5-2, the Bears are 5-3, and then the Rams are 5-3. And if the season ended today, that would be your playoff field in the NFC. Seattle would get the first round bye. And remember, the playoffs have been expanded to 7 teams in each conference, a total of 14, which means the number one seed gets a first-round bye, and that's the only team that gets a bye in each conference. So right now, Seattle is the team who lost in the final seconds overtime on a field goal by Arizona, or they'd be undefeated. Seattle has the best record. But the question is Tampa Bay the best team in NFC despite not having the best record right now? Or is there another team in NFC that is better than Tampa Bay? Listen, I understand Tampa Bay didn't play great last night against the Giants. I know they have Tom Brady at quarterback, so some people automatically say, well, they're great because they have Tom Brady, and he's been playing well. And so people immediately will point and say, well, the Buccaneers barely beat the Giants. Hey, the Chiefs lost to the Raiders at home. So it's hard to win in the National Football League. It's not an automatic you're going to beat a bad team, especially on the road. The Buccaneers found a way to win last night. They're down 14-6, and they made a play at the end of the game. They won 25-23. A win's a win. You don't get extra credit for winning by 30 or 26 like the Chiefs did the other day against the Jets, okay? So the Buccaneers did what they had to do. They're 6-2. They lost the first week of the year when they had no offseason, in essence, no preseason games, Tom Brady and a new offense, and people are already writing off Tom Brady. And I said on this very show after week one, I said, just chill out about that because the Buccaneers are going to only get better. And the Buccaneers are sitting here at 6-2, and I've seen them play a few times this year. And when I look at the NFC, let's just go from the 7th seed right now, which is the Rams. The Rams look awful offensively against the Dolphins the other day. The Rams defensively have been up and down. I don't think the Rams are better than the Buccaneers. Well, if Dusty disagrees, he can jump in.
The Rams aren't better than the Buccaneers.
The Bears are not better than the Buccaneers. The Bears have – now, I know the Bears did beat the Buccaneers. I get that. That was in Chicago. And Brady forgot how many downs there were and so forth. But the Bears are a – they're not a complete team. The Bears have a really good defense. Their offense sputters quite a bit. So I don't think the Bears are better than the Bucs, even though they beat them. The Saints, I know the Saints beat the Buccaneers. I know that was week one. They're going to play again here very soon, and I think the Bucs are going to win the rematch. The Bucs are much better than they were week one, and the Saints, they have skated by, although they have won, but the Saints have not looked like anybody that you would say they're the team to beat in NFC. The Saints have issues offensively at times, believe it or not. Now, they get Michael Thomas back. That may change some things. The Packers have a horrible defense right now. Mm-hmm. There's no other way to put it. I mean, the Vikings ran all over the Packers, and we know what happened to the Packers in the NFC playoffs a year ago when the 49ers ran for what was almost 300 yards. So the Packers, I don't think, are better than the Buccaneers. And you know what? Why would I say that? The Bucs just beat them 2 weeks ago and pummeled them. Arizona, you know, I don't know. Arizona might be better than the Buccaneers. I mean, they've got a good defense to an extent. They've got Kyler Murray. They've got outstanding receivers in Hopkins, Fitzgerald. But I still think the Buccaneers are the more complete team. So really it comes down to the top two teams in the NFC. Seattle 6-1 and Tampa Bay 6-2. And I'm going to tell you Tampa Bay's better, and here's why. Because Seattle's defense is not very good. And part of that is because they've had a ton of injuries on the defensive side of the ball. The Seahawks have to boat race everybody. The Buccaneers have a very good defense, very good. They have a really good offensive line. They have a Hall of Fame quarterback. They've got really good receivers. They've got a really good tight end in Gronkowski. Their running game is, I think, underrated. I think the Buccaneers are the most complete team in NFC. Does that mean they're the best team in NFC? That's up to you to decide at the halfway mark. And this is why I bring this up.
The complete part for sure, yeah.
They're the most complete team.
Yeah.
And they're only going to get better. I think they have more room to improve than some of these other teams because of Brady's first year and a lot of new faces there in Tampa. We got Fournette at running back. Gronkowski is a tight end. They're still getting used to everybody and understanding the terminology and everything else. So I think Tampa Bay, by the end of the year, is going to be the best team in the NFC. I do. And I think they are the most complete team right now. If the season ended today, the Rams would be at the Buccaneers in the first round of the playoffs. The Bears would be at the Cardinals. The Saints would be at the Packers. And the Seahawks would get a bye. So that's the NFC playoff picture. We're at the halfway point for the most part. Now let's turn to the AFC. You agree that the Bucs are the most complete team?
Yeah.
Do you think they're the best team?
I think if Seattle's playing the right way, they're the best team.
Okay.
In the NFC. But again, their defense is a liability. There's no question about that.
You get to the playoffs, that'll come back and bite you, ask the Chiefs a few years ago.
Yeah.
The AFC, the best team in the AFC, many believe it's the Steelers now. And then there are people who still believe the Chiefs are the best team in the AFC. And to me, I'm not really worried about it because I think the Chiefs' schedule is conducive to going 14-2. If they go 14-2, great. 13-3, I think, is pretty much going to – I think that's worst-case scenario. Unless – and here's the thing we don't talk about. And Lord knows people are tired about hearing about COVID-19. But we automatically – this is – we got to adjust to the new norm, and that's what this is now. You look at the Chiefs, and we went through the schedule yesterday. Well, they should beat Carolina. They should beat the Raiders. Tampa Bay will be tough. They'll beat Denver. At Miami might be tougher than we think. At the Saints, they can win that. Falcons, Chargers. We do not know if some prominent Chiefs player gets COVID.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know if there's going to be a quarantine on the Chiefs and 10 players are unavailable for a game. We don't know if Big Ben Roethlisberger is going to get hurt. We don't know if a key player for the Steelers is going to get COVID. Marlon Humphrey, an outstanding defensive corner for the Baltimore Ravens, has the coronavirus. That impacts the Ravens defensively going in their game this week. So while we sit here and we look at the schedule and we act and we think that we know what we're talking about, and I'm talking about me and Dusty and all of you out there that are football fans, and you go, well, the Chiefs, so they got cakewalk, the 14-2. You know what throws a wrench into that? Is come Thursday when all of a sudden Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce tested positive for COVID-19. And, oh, no, now what do you do? Well, now we're not going to get that game in. Now all of a sudden she's got to find a way to reschedule that game. And this and that, and then the schedule's out of whack, so forth and so on. And who knows what happens with all of those distractions. So COVID-19 could be the great X factor. The other thing is you can get to the playoffs, and the Chiefs might be the number one seed. What happens if when they're getting ready for the division round of the playoffs, and all of a sudden they get struck by COVID? How's that going to be handled?
Mm-hmm.
See, we don't know. There's no way to know.
No.
But if you go off of forgetting all the COVID stuff, the best two teams AFC clearly are the Steelers and the Chiefs. I don't fear the Steelers because the Steelers' defense is not that great. I think the Chiefs can score on the Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
I think Big Ben would make a mistake against the Steve Spagnuolo defense. Now, if it's Bob Sutton as defensive coordinator of Chiefs, I think the Chiefs should fear the Steelers because they're going to be in trouble because they won't be able to stop the Steelers. The Steelers have weapons. Claypool's a great young receiver, and Schuster's an outstanding talent, and you got Ebra now as a tight end. Connor's a solid running back. Their line is solid. Their defense is kind of up and down. The Steelers were outgained 2-1 against Baltimore, but they lucked out because Jackson threw a pick six. You know, Mahomes hardly ever does that.
Mm-hmm.
He has one pick all year long. And speaking of Mahomes, they showed the numbers compared to his MVP year 2 years ago. Do you know the numbers are almost identical?
Uh-huh.
Except his touchdown interception ratio is better.
Yeah, it is.
And so everybody's talking about Russell Wilson as MVP.
But how you go through half the season with one interception.
One interception. As many times as they throw the ball.
Yeah.
21 touchdowns, one interception, and he's completing 67% of his passes. Mahomes is having MVP year, and a lot of people would say for him it's average right now.
Yeah. They're not even talking about him.
No.
I mean.
Well, Max Kellerman started talking about it yesterday. He said, listen.
Well, yeah, they're going to start.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, he had a 416-yard passing day and five touchdowns, so that gets him back on the mat.
Put that in the.
But when you look at MVP, Russell Wilson has 26 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. He has one loss. The Chiefs have one loss. But they're, you know, arguably the best team in each conference. And automatically people just go, well, Russell Wilson never got an MVP vote before. This is his year to win MVP. And here's Patrick Mahomes, who hasn't even gotten red hot yet. And you know he will at some point probably. And maybe he's starting to with that game against the Jets. Patrick Mahomes quietly is having just as good a year as he did in 18 when he threw for 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns. Now, his yards probably won't be quite that high, and he won't get 50 touchdowns because he doesn't have to. But he could easily, at the end of the year, throw for about 4,500 yards and have 40 touchdown passes and 5 interceptions. And that might be being mean to Patrick. He might end up with 2.
Yeah.
So how do you not give the MVP to that guy?
Yeah, it's tough.
You know, it goes back to the whole, well, we don't want to give it to LeBron every year. We don't want to give it to MJ every year. And then granted, Jackson won it last year. But Max Kellerman made an interesting point, and I don't watch that show. I got it tagged to me on Twitter, and that's why I watched the clip.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, listen, you know, Patrick Mahomes, he makes a good point. I don't agree with Kellerman all the time when I see the little things I do because, I don't watch the show much. But he was basically saying, listen, everybody's talking about Russell Wilson and so forth and so on. Have you paid attention to what Patrick Mahomes is doing in Kansas City? The reigning Super Bowl MVP? Quietly, he's having a sensational year. 21 touchdowns and 1 interception is insane. That's what he's doing. You know, Aaron Rodgers having a great year. But, I mean, Mahomes could easily win the MVP. And not a lot of people are talking about him in that realm. And he hasn't had this huge breakout streak where he's thrown for, you know, 15 touchdowns in 3 games like he did back in 18.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Chiefs still could get better as well. What team, and by the way, Watkins has been hurt. Mitchell Schwartz, mm-hmm. the right tackle, has been out. And the offensive line has held up. What team would be the worst playoff matchup for the Chiefs, in your opinion? Right now, Pittsburgh is the 1 seed. If the playoffs were to start today, the Browns would be in Kansas City in the first round. The Titans would be at the Bills. The Ravens would be at the Colts. The Colts actually have the tiebreak on the Titans, so they'd win that division, not the Titans. And then Pittsburgh would wait the, well, whoever is the lowest seed remaining, I would assume. So it could be Cleveland. It could be Tennessee, which that would be a tough matchup. Pittsburgh second round to play a Tennessee or something. And the Raiders are sitting just outside at 4-3, and the Dolphins are 4-3. So I'll include those 9 teams because I don't think the Broncos are going to make the playoffs. I don't fear them. I think the Bengals are a team that could be a little bit scary at year's end. Chargers just find ways to lose games. The Patriots look to be toast, although you never know. Texans are 1-6, so they're toast. Jaguars, we know the Jets are hapless and helpless. So you have 9 teams really vying for 7 spots. You want to include the Broncos, fine. You got 10 teams vying for 7 spots. Of those 10 teams, what team, as a Chiefs fan, Dusty, do you worry the most about? What would be the worst playoff matchup for the Chiefs? And I say this not trying to bring up that, oh, my Lord, the Chiefs should be scared. Because, you know, the last couple of years, people have been like, well, we're scared of the Ravens. Well, all we do is beat the Ravens. So, and then we pummeled them earlier this year. They can't defend this offense. So people don't fear the Ravens anymore. Chiefs fans don't fear the Ravens. I would guess the Chiefs fans are now automatically fearing the Steelers, which I'm going to tell you right now, you shouldn't fear the Steelers. I mean, you respect them. Don't get me wrong. Steelers beat the Chiefs? Of course they can. Can anybody on their A-plus or A, you're going to have to bring their A game to beat the Chiefs, and that's what the Raiders did when they won. They played pretty much their A game. That's what it's going to take. You can't bring your B game and beat the Chiefs. It's just not going to happen, I don't think. So what team... I guess I'll take the Steelers out of the equation because that's the cop-out easy answer. What team besides the Steelers, and I wouldn't even say the Steelers are a team you should fear or worry about. What's the worst matchup? Not who the Chiefs are scared of. Who's the worst matchup for the Chiefs out of the 10 teams I mentioned? Of course, the Chiefs are one of them that are vying for the 7 playoff spots, and which, by the way, it may expand to 8 here in a moment. We'll get to that.
Yeah, I'm like you. It's like this is a lot tougher question to answer because you feel like the Chiefs are, I mean, whoever you go up against,
yeah,
it's the Chiefs are going to win that game.
Yes.
Like, they've got what they need to win the game.
Right.
But I go back to the same team as always. It's a team like the Titans that can control the clock, can run, if they get going with their running
game. Yeah.
Can control the clock and Andy Reid. I mean, just look at his history against the Titans,
right,
too.
Right.
I know they beat them last year in the AFC Championship, but down early, and it wasn't quite a game like the Texans. They were down early where they were just making a lot of mistakes. It was the Titans really doing good things early.
Right.
It's still Tennessee for me for some reason.
I agree with you.
And it's like just because they're a team that has veterans. They don't have stars and studs. They got Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
If he gets going and then they play good enough defense – to maybe stop you a couple times, and they control time of possession, run the football successfully, those are the teams that can beat the Chiefs. I'm not worried about some high-octane offense trying to keep up with them.
I agree with you 100%. That is a team that would, I think, is the worst matchup. Now, I'm not saying the Chiefs can't beat them.
No, and I'm not scared of the Titans anymore like I was before last year before they beat them in the championship.
But the question I'm posing is not what team scares the Chiefs, because there is no team that scares the Chiefs.
Yeah.
There's no team the Chiefs should be fearful of. The question is worded very carefully. What team would be the worst playoff matchup for the Chiefs? And I agree with you. I think the Titans would be the worst of all the teams remaining. I still think they'd beat them.
I do, yeah.
But I will say this. I think Tennessee is better than last year, and here's why. I've watched them quite a bit.
I agree with that, yeah.
Derrick Henry's still Derrick Henry. Their offensive line, they lost Lewin, about outstanding tackle for the year. That's a big blow for them. Mm-hmm. They picked up Desmond King, who was a Pro Bowl corner 2 years ago from the Chargers in a trade yesterday. That's going to help them on the back end. And obviously, a corner like that would help against a team like the Chiefs who like to pass the ball. Okay? But I'll tell you why Tennessee is better than they were last year. I know they're 5-2. They tripped up this past week and lost to the Bengals, an up-and-coming team. And their other loss was to the Steelers when they were down and then came back. And if they kick a field goal and make it, they would have gone overtime and could have easily won the game. They whipped the Bills. I mean, the Titans are legitimate. There's no question about it. I still think they're going to win the division. And even if they don't, they're going to be scaring the playoffs for some teams. Ryan Tannehill is playing better than he did last year. Ryan Tannehill has more weapons this year in the receiving game. I watched him against the Bills. A.J. Brown is a stud in the making. If you haven't seen A.J. Brown play, you've seen D.K. Metcalf and how great he is. A.J. Brown is kind of a D.K. Metcalf clone. He's a big guy, tall, fast, and he's tough to match up with. And then they got Humphreys, who's a good possession receiver, and he missed this last game against the Bengals. And so that, I think, was key in them losing that game. He's a key possession receiver, kind of like Sammy Watkins for the Chiefs. So Humphreys was out, but he's a really good receiver. They've got Corey Davis, who's a really good receiver. And, of course, they got Derrick Henry, who's the ultimate weapon. They have guys that can hurt you, and they've got a quarterback that is playing. Honestly, Ryan Tannehill, till they lost this past week, was having an MVP-type season. Mm-hmm. He's been mentioned as a top-five MVP candidate. And, you know, a lot of people scoffed, including myself, when the Titans gave him a whole bunch of money and kept him after last year's playoff run. I thought, really? You're going to give the guy $84 million or whatever it was, $90 million for 4 years for this guy? But he is getting better. And he's more comfortable in the offense. And they don't have to rely on Derrick Henry to carry it 30 times to win. So that is a team that, you know, listen, if Ryan Tannehill played a little bit better last year in that game against the Kansas City Chiefs, that could have gone the other way. And that was in Kansas City with a whole packed house of fans. You might not have that this year. So home field advantage might not mean as much as it has in the past for these teams like Pittsburgh and Kansas City. So I do. I think the Titans, I agree with you. The Browns don't scare me. I know they can run the ball, but I just don't think the Browns have enough firepower. I'm not getting scared of anybody that can run the ball. Even if a team can go in and run for 200 yards against the Chiefs, I'm not going to freak out about it because we've seen lots of teams do that and hardly ever win. They can keep it close. Eventually, the Chiefs get the ball last. They make the plays. The Colts don't fear. I don't fear the Colts very much because Philip Rivers, I think, is still Rivers.
I look at the quarterback because I was thinking maybe Colts, but I'm like, I know Philip Rivers is a quarterback now.
The Raiders, the Raiders concern me a little bit, but I'm not super fearful of them. The Dolphins, I think since it's a rookie quarterback, I don't really count them right now, but I think in a year or two they could be one of the biggest threats in the AFC to the Chiefs. I do believe that. I think the Bengals and Dolphins could be two of the biggest threats to the Chiefs down the line. And I think the Chargers could be too with Justin Herbert. I do think he's the real deal. The Ravens don't scare me because the Chiefs have had their number. The Colts don't scare me at Phillip Rivers. The Bills, you know, I was worried about them early in the year, and I saw how the Chiefs just ran right through them. The Bills will make adjustments if they play again. A rematch would worry me a little bit, but I think the Chiefs find a way because Allen is a young quarterback that does make a few mistakes. And then Pittsburgh, granted, they're really good. Don't get me wrong. They're undefeated. They could easily have lost a couple of games. They're not going to go 16-0. So, Todd, don't worry about it. He's a Dolphin fan. Clover's a big Dolphin fan, and he says he doesn't celebrate. He was just waiting for the Chiefs to lose the game, and then he cheered for the Chiefs because he wants the Dolphins to, you know, live in the past and have that undefeated season from 1972, which was before Dusty and I were both born. So we're living in the past like all those people that pop the champagne. And pretty soon the Dolphins, all those guys that pop the champagne and celebrate, they won't even be able to pop the champagne. They're so old, they won't even be able to do anything. So they'll just, like, grab a water and have the lid open, and that's how they're going to celebrate. So I do think the Titans would be the toughest matchup for the Chiefs, and then I'd say second would be the Steelers. I still think the Chiefs are the best team in the AFC. I mean, I might be biased. I don't think the Chiefs' defense is outstanding. The Steelers' defense isn't outstanding. The Chiefs' offense, I think, is better than the Steelers' offense. Special teams-wise, probably a push. I think it's a pretty even matchup. And I know Mike Tomlin would have a game plan and so forth and so on. I just think the Chiefs will be just fine as long as they stay healthy.
100%. That's, I like we talk about. I mean, you go in the last 2 years, you go into a game thinking it's the Chiefs, man. They gotta, the other team's gonna have to make them make mistakes. The Chiefs are gonna have to hurt themselves
exactly
to lose games,
which they did against the Raiders.
100%. I mean,
well, mainly their defense. Got, yeah, and the offense stalled out at times.
That's the one game where you're like, ah, the defense was terrible.
Yeah, it was.
That's the week I decided to pick them up on my fantasy team too. It did not turn
bad
out well.
Choice there.
But it has turned out very well the last few weeks to have them on my fantasy team.
Right.
You know, they get after it defensively, and they knew they had a bad game. And I think it, honestly, like we talked about then, it was kind of a wake up call for that defense. I think because mm-hmm. they've really played well since then.
No
and,
doubt.
And kind of took that personally. There's no doubt about it. And so, yeah, you go into these games thinking, especially now that they've won the Super Bowl and they've been to that pinnacle, and mm-hmm. you know how good
like
they
Mahomes
are.
Like Mahomes said yesterday, we know we can do it. We've done it now.
Yeah. So. And it's just like every game you go in, you expect to win. There is no wondering, will we win today? It's the only reason you don't win today is if you beat yourself.
Right.
Basically, most of the time the Chiefs are going to lose. A lot of it's going to be on them. And so it's kind of nice. I won't lie about that.
It is
a team that you can just be like, yeah, this team's supposed to win today, and if they don't, it's their fault.
You really do feel like the biggest obstacle for the Chiefs is themselves.
Yeah.
That's the biggest one. Now, all this focus lately about, you know, wanting the Ravens to beat the Steelers so that the Chiefs could get to, you know, number one, be the number one seed and get that one bye may mean nothing.
Yeah.
A loss of NFL regular season games could result in an expanded playoff field. While no NFL games have yet to be canceled due to the coronavirus pandemic, the NFL Competition Committee expects to present a resolution to the league's 32 owners based on having a 16-team playoff if games are lost due to COVID-19, which means that nobody would have a bye.
Yeah.
The NFL's competition committee met virtually on Monday to discuss the resolution, and they also noted that future loss of bye weeks could increase the odds of an extended playoff field. Several teams, including undefeated Steelers, have already seen their bye weeks altered due to the pandemic. By virtue of the league's new collective bargaining agreement, the NFL was already set to go from a 12 to a 14-team playoff this winter, as we have established. Under the 14-team field, only the number one seed in each conference would receive a playoff bye, while the other six teams play each other on wild card weekend. However, if the playoff field is expanded to 16 teams, then the top two seeds in each conference would likely receive byes, is what they're saying. So they would not play it. That's interesting. So the top two seeds would get byes in a 16-team field. So you would have, okay, I see what they're doing. Basically, three would play eight, four would play seven, five would play six, and one and two would get byes. So that would help the Chiefs in this situation based on their the two seed right now. So that's the talk. If they lose games, that they would expand to a 16-team playoff. It marked the first time since 1982 that at least half of the NFL's teams participated in the postseason. The league decided to include 16 of the NFL's 28 teams back in 82, dubbing it the Super Bowl tournament. Eight teams for each conference participated in the playoffs that winter, with the Redskins winning the four-game tournament after defeating the Dolphins. I don't even remember that at all. I remember the Super Bowl, and I remember watching that game, and John Riggins running roughshod over the Dolphins, but I remember that's how it all was set up. So, an extended playoff field would certainly help teams like the 49ers, who have tons of injuries now, the Dolphins and the Raiders, who are on the outside looking in, and it would help the Broncos to have a chance to make the playoffs as well. So, speaking of the 49ers, Jimmy Garoppolo out for 6 weeks, high ankle sprain, and George Kittle. I always want to say Greg Kittle. George Kittle, right?
Yes.
Tied in for the 49ers. He's out 8 weeks with a fracture in his foot. So the Niners, man, they've just been decimated by injuries this year. They're a good team. They've actually won some games without some of these key guys, but you just can't keep overcoming that. They're 4-4 and last in their division, and they were the NFC champion a year ago.
Yeah. Just Sherman, Bosa, Thomas, all those guys on the
Ford and Bosa are out defensively.
D Ford, too. Yeah, there's one I was missing. It was the former chief. Four guys from their defense are on IR right now that are pretty key guys to their defense.
Big time. Big time. Also, the NFL trade deadline is today at 3 o'clock. I already mentioned that the Steelers yesterday picked up a linebacker from the Jets to help their defense because they had the injury to Devin Bush, who's out for the year, and that's a big blow for them defensively. And then also Desmond King, who was a Pro Bowl corner 2 years ago, as I mentioned earlier, he was shipped to the Titans for a sixth-round pick. The 49ers traded linebacker Quan Alexander to the New Orleans Saints. There is talk that Texan receivers Brandon Cooks and Will Fuller on the trading block, and perhaps Patriots corner Stephon Gilmore, one of the best corners in the league, would be available. And also a Browns tight end, David Njoku, might be available via trade, which is interesting because the Browns right now are, of course, in the playoff hunt, or would be in the playoffs if the season ended today. Jerry Jones has said that there are untouchable players on his team, even though they're 2-6. And the Patriots, what do they want for Stephon Gilmore? More than likely, they will want at least a first-rounder and a player in return, which would be a steep price to pay. I don't know what Gilmore's contract is either.
I don't know that I would trade that for...
I wouldn't.
Defensive back, but, that's me.
If somebody really needs it, maybe they will. Somebody will be interested. Hey, on this date in sports history, 5 years ago today, there was a parade in downtown Kansas City for the Kansas City Royals. Whoa, 800,000 people came out for that big parade. That's hard to believe that was 5 years ago.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that are hard to believe it was that long ago.
It seems like it's even longer than 5 years ago, doesn't it, with everything?
Sometimes, yeah, with the way the Royals have played the past couple seasons, it's like you get further away from it.
This last 8 months with COVID was the other reason I was thinking. So you've already voted.
I have already voted.
All right, so this is time for our new segment called Who Did Dusty Vote For? And Dusty says he voted for the people he checked in the boxes.
Yes.
Right? That's who you voted for.
People that were on the ballot.
There you go. Perfect. Excellent.
Well, actually, I'm in one spot.
Did you write in Mickey Mouse, Dusty?
In one spot, I didn't vote for people that were already on the ballot. I wrote some people in.
Well, that's okay, too. Yeah. That's what I was trying to tell people earlier on Waterside Wake Up is, especially young people, contrary to what some people may try to tell you, that when you go in the vote, there's no law that says if you're Republican, you got to vote all Republican. And if you're Democrat, you got to vote for all the D's for Democrat. You actually can vote for whoever is on that ballot, or you can write in somebody, as I said, and then you just mentioned that.
Yeah.
And I go back and I look at who I vote for, because I just go right through it, who I think's the best for each one. That's the way we should be voting, in my opinion. And doesn't matter what color you are. And then at the end, I go back and I look. I'm like, okay, so what was my breakdown? For fun, I go back, how many Republicans and Democrats did I vote for? And usually, I don't even know if I've ever voted straight down one way or the other. You know, I might have more one year that's left or than right, and then another year I've got more right than left.
Yeah.
Because, things change in your life. Every four years, it changes. Your priorities changes. Issues that were important to you 4 years ago might not be as important to you now.
Yeah.
Things like that happen.
I will say, when I was a little bit less educated on it, not the voting process, but who to vote for,
right,
and maybe what I felt and things like that. When I first started voting, there's a pretty good chance I probably had a one party ticket on my ballot, just through the whole thing. But
sure,
like you say, I don't know if it's always I change my ideas, or if the people that are running change their ideas about what my ideas should be,
right,
or what my ideas are, and they think they're the same, but they're not, and there's some things that'll change that, and I can confidently say that I did not have a ballot that was all one ticket.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not afraid to say that publicly.
Well, you shouldn't be.
And it's like,
you should never have somebody tell you should vote straight down one side or another.
And
if they want to, that's fine. That doesn't mean you have to. I want everybody to know there's no law that says you have to vote straight down one side or the other.
And I've said it a lot.
You're not a traitor if you vote for somebody you think's better and they happen to be a different party. Yeah. You're not a traitor.
Yeah. And I've just said it a lot throughout this whole thing, because I think this does tie into sports a lot because of what we've seen at games. Like the Chiefs have the big vote painted on their field the other day. They have it as their profile
16
picture.
16 NFL stadiums are being used as voting locations.
Yeah, and exactly. And
did you see the lines in Kansas City off the highway?
I didn't.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Yeah. Huge lines to vote today.
Yeah,
which I'm like, why didn't you advance vote? But which I should have done. I haven't done that yet. But I don't think there's going to be a huge line of cars coming out of Beloit today.
No, I don't ever worry about it here.
I went
down, I waited 2 minutes for about 30 seconds for the person in front of me to get checked in, and then I got checked in.
How long did it take you to vote? Once you got your ballot, what's it? 2 minutes, 5 minutes?
3 minutes max, probably.
Yeah, doesn't take very long.
Yeah, but I've
heard people tell me that. Well, I don't have time to vote. Seriously? It takes you what, 5, 10 minutes?
Yeah, and I had this discussion with my cousin. I was like, if you make voting a priority, you will figure out how to do it, right?
Oh, yeah. Just like anything else in life.
I have family that's not living in the town or in the county that they're registered in. So they're like, oh, I can't get back to vote. There's all kinds of advanced voting. I see on Facebook somebody that's from Kensington that it was her first chance to vote in this year's election. She drove all the way from college in Salina to go back to Kensington to vote.
Good for her.
If you make it a priority,
good for her.
You will vote.
Yes.
Okay.
If it's important
if
to you, you will.
If you're complaining that you can't make it, it's not important to you.
No,
don't tell me it is, because it's not.
Yeah.
And especially in the day and age that we're living in. And I've had a lot of posts on social media over the past couple months about the importance of not only registering to vote, because I feel like that's everybody was just like register, mm-hmm. and vote. But understand who you're voting for is what I've always said. Like, research it and actually understand what you're doing. Don't just walk in there and let the whole country, don't share your right to vote, basically, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go off of all these posts that are shared on Facebook and Twitter, and everybody's trying to sway you this way or that way. Do your research yourself, understand what you're doing. And I feel like in the sporting world, a lot of what we've seen has been geared to vote, but vote for a certain candidate.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you.
We need change in this country.
It isn't direct, but it is indirect.
It feels very indirect.
I think you're right.
To vote for a certain presidential candidate.
Absolutely. No, I agree. I agree with you there. No question.
But I mean, like I say, I mean, but I love the fact that they're telling people to vote. Get out there and do that. It's just, you're inundated with it now, and I think it might have been too much.
The best thing that's coming out of this election, in my opinion, and we haven't even, you know, obviously had the full election. You know, I still got a vote today. You voted, and other people have voted, you know, weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
They said a ton of advance voting, and there's, what did they say I heard today? Is it 70 million people have already voted?
I think some.
We have 338 million people in this country, so that means 25% of America's already voted. And that's already a decent turnout, believe it or not. So the voting attendance is going to be probably as high as we've seen in quite some time. And that's the good thing about this whole thing, is that whether you want to credit whatever candidate you want to credit for getting people to get fired up to go vote, whether for the person or against the person, that part is a good thing, is that we're getting more people and younger people more interested in voting. That's important. Young people need to be involved in our democracy. They need to be involved in the election process. And I think for quite some time, a lot of young people have just been like, whatever. And I think now, I think that's important for the next generations to be involved. I think there's this indifference that we've had for quite some time. And I think it is important that you vote. And like I've said before, it's not about necessarily like, listen, let's be honest. Dusty and my vote is not going to determine who wins the presidential race tonight.
No.
It won't. But it could determine a local race. It could help in regards to, you know, you got a U.S. Senate race between, supposedly going to be tight between Marshall and Beaulieu. I mean, who knows what our vote has there. So you don't want to get to the point where my vote doesn't count at all. Now, I will say this state is going to go red for the president, no doubt. I mean, this is a Republican state. Kansas is, and that's the way it is. There'll be people that vote for Biden from the state, but it's going to be very, I think, lopsided that Trump's going to win Kansas. But Kansas, Trump already knows, is going to have that. So that's why these swing states they're talking about, like Pennsylvania and Florida, are so important, you know, and maybe Arizona as well and others. There's like 8 key states they're talking about tonight that's going to probably swing the election. Kansas is not being discussed because it is a red state. But the fact that more Kansans are going to vote, whether they're voting, you know, red or blue, there are more people voting across the country. If we've got more people that haven't voted, more people are registering to vote. That's a good thing. We need more people to be involved, in my opinion. And I think that's the one great thing that's coming out of it. Now, here's my fear. Here's my concern. And I really hope that they're doing this for nothing. But there are reports that a lot of businesses, some of the bigger cities, are boarding up, fearing there's going to be violence if the election doesn't go a certain way. And I to me, that really is, that's not what this country's about. We have an election process, if we don't trust the process and we want to contend it all the time, then we'll never have closure. You know what I'm saying? We can keep contending this and challenging. Like, it's like challenge a play in football. We keep replaying it over and over. You know, we don't accept the end result that the official said it's a catch. Well, no, it wasn't. Well, but yeah, but you know, 63% of people in America was polled and they said it was, and you're one of the 37%. Well, that doesn't mean that you have to, I mean, you can contest it all you want. It doesn't mean you have to go, you know, raid the concession stand and beat up people because, you know, the call didn't go your way. That's not how we handle things in this country. At least we shouldn't. And we've got people on both. And let me stress this. We've got people on both sides that are prone to violence. We've seen it. We've seen people with various protests that have got out of hand with violence. We've seen supporters of certain candidates that have used intimidation tactics and so forth and so on. So don't sit here and jump in and say, well, it's just one side. No, it's not.
Absolutely.
It never is. It's you can say, well, this one's 53%, this one's 47%. That's whatever. You can argue that all you want till the cows come home. The bottom line, and you're going to believe whatever you want to believe anyway, but both sides are guilty of some of that logic, if you want to call it logic, or some people say insanity, of possible violence tonight if it doesn't go your way. And I'm hearing it could be possibly from either side. I think a lot of people are focusing on one side, thinking that's what's going to happen. But I wouldn't be surprised if one doesn't win because they think they're going to win, and then they feel it's rigged, and then there's going to be a big problem there too. And that worries me, because to me, that's not where we want to go in this country. And I said this earlier today, and I know this is a sports show, but it does pertain to sports in regards to being active. You know, we talk about being active and involved and being somebody that wants to do what's best for the team, right, in sports. Well, you're trying to do what's best for the country. Now, your viewpoint might be different than mine or Dusty's or whatever, and that's what we all have to respect. If you're losing friendships and relationships because of somebody not being open to your point of view, or they hate you now because you are going to be a red or a vote red or blue or white or purple, whatever, then that person really was never your friend, okay? And you're probably better off without them not being your friends, because they've showed their true colors. But it's called being respectful of each other. And that's something that I think our country is getting away from. We need to be respectful of, this is my opinion. That doesn't mean it's wrong. It doesn't mean it's right. It's opinion. Let me stress that. I don't agree with everything Dusty says. Dusty doesn't agree with everything I say. And I'm sure Dusty's going to vote differently on certain races as I vote for today. Okay, if we compared our ballots, I guarantee it's not exactly the same.
No.
And you know what? I'm not going to be mad at Dusty because he voted for a certain person. And he's not going to be mad at me because I voted for a certain person. But there are people out there that I believe are mad at people because they vote for the person they don't want. And then you've really lost touch with reality. And I'm talking to both sides. And so let's get through this tonight. I know a lot of people are excited about it being over, which it might not be. If it's close, we could have the whole hanging Chad situation out of Florida with Gore and Bush, and that lasted forever. And that, I think, would be the worst thing for our country. I just want us to move on, whatever direction it's going to be. If it's going to be another term with Trump, if it's going to be a new president in Biden, I just am ready for us to move on from this electoral process. And I want our country to somehow... I saw this the other day, and I said it earlier today on the show, and it bothers me a little bit. And this is just my input, and people can take it for 2 cents or not, and then we'll move on to the situation with Bill Self talking about Billy Tubbs, and we'll close the show here in a moment. But I want to get Dusty's input on this real quick, too. I've seen people, and once again, from both sides. I'm not just saying this because I'm scared of one side. I'm not, okay? I'm scared of certain people on both sides doing bad things.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what scares me and worries me. I think we're in a pretty good spot here where we're at in our country in regards to where we live and are located, but who knows. So when I see people posting Biden country and I see people posting Trump nation, this is not Biden country. This country is not Biden's country. This nation is not Trump's nation. This is our country. This is Dusty's country. This is my country. This is your country. This is not one in particular person's country. It's our country. It's not. This country isn't being renamed Trump America. This country is not being renamed Biden country. And if it is, well, now we have, well, we're just going to scrap the United States of America, rename our country by whoever the president becomes? Come on. And some of that is just jargon and slang. But some of it, there are people that truly believe that. Like, it's Biden country. Or it's Trump Nation. Biden country, go out and vote. Trump Nation, go out. Trump Nation, Biden country, what? No, it's the United States of America, but the problem is the one word at the beginning of that is being tested. The United part,
every
right?
Day.
Every single day. It
for
seems like the divide
time.
Gets it's wider.
Not, and this isn't new.
No, it's been that way for a while, but it yeah. seems like it gets worse.
Yeah.
So we the people. We the people. It's our country. It's not a 78-year-old guy's country or a 72-year-old guy's country, all right? It's not. It's our country. And so how do we get our point across? By voting. That would be the best way to do it, is to vote. Not to go out and cause violence on either side and go, you know, raid people's businesses and break up storefronts and whatever else, or go, you know, bully people or beat up somebody or, you know, commit crimes. That's probably not the right way to go here. Because if we want to continue to be the greatest country in the world, we have to respect one another before we expect to be respected by the rest of the world, don't we? Doesn't it kind of start here?
Well, yeah.
So I say it's sure. We the people. It's our country. It's America. And as I've said many times, I'm so sick of the two-party system. I'm sick of the fact that you basically have two choices. It's and then you just tear everybody down on one side, and you don't brag about how great the one side is. You rip down the other one. That's just what we do nowadays, and it's so negative, and it's so at times so hateful. And I'm just to the point where I'm like, you know what? I've said this 1,000 times. I'm an American, born and raised in America. I'm a Kansan as well. I want what's best for the country. I'm about we the people. It's our country. It's not one person's country.
But we've gotten so far away from we the people, I don't even know if we can get back to
that's
it.
That's scary.
One of the things you talked about in there was that it's great that we have the voter turnout right this year. Mm-hmm. And so obviously I agree with you that it's not Trump Nation, it's not Biden country, whatever it is. It's the United States of America, and it's our country. And it's people like my dad, my great uncle that fought in World War II. It's people like that that fought for our country.
They gave us the right to vote.
They didn't
and freedom to vote.
My great uncle in World War II was not fighting for Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He wasn't fighting for Roosevelt country. He was fighting for the United States of America. My dad was in Vietnam when Lyndon Johnson was the president. I don't think my dad cared 2 cents about, I want to say something other than cents, but right. I want to say sure. cents about Lyndon right. Johnson.
Sure.
Okay. He was there because he knew he was going to get drafted for one. He just went ahead and enlisted in the Army right away. And that's something I'll always be proud of him for. And,
sure.
And so these guys didn't go for a president. Okay. They went for their country. And they went for the freedom of our country. And if you think that I can't grasp or wrap my head around the concept of a president being the country, because there's so many people in this country, I think, that feel that think the president holds more power than they actually do.
Right.
And you need the whole judicial, or not the judicial, you need the whole system.
Yes.
To make it work. And the president can't do this without approval from this, from Congress, from this, right? Okay, so the reason I bring that up is because voter turnout, okay? I want the same energy in 2 years.
Yes.
Not just in a presidential election.
I agree with you.
I want the same energy from everybody that's voting. Yeah, I want the same energy from the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yes.
The San Antonio Spurs, teams that I support, that I keep seeing it on their social media. I want the exact same energy
yes.
with every election.
Yes.
Because the presidential election, honestly, determines not a whole lot of how you live your daily life.
Yes.
Whether you like me saying that or not, or whether you agree with that or not, especially in this state of Kansas, mm-hmm. it is the absolute truth. Mm-hmm. And people just go nuts about one person
mm-hmm.
leading our country, whether it's Barack Obama, you can go back, whether it's George W. Bush,
Bill Clinton.
Go back all the way, Bill Clinton, George Bush, Ronald Reagan, in all of history.
Mm-hmm.
People think the president means more than they actually do for your daily life.
True.
The president means a lot, listen,
yes, no
internationally,
yes.
of what this
Foreign
country
relations.
Is, no
sure.
doubt about it.
Yes.
They have the power in their hands of a lot of things.
Yes.
But for my daily life in this country, my vote in 2022 is going to be more important than my vote in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It's mm-hmm. a fact. Your vote for your governor in this state is more important than your vote for your president of this country in this state. There's other places that's probably not true.
Mm-hmm.
But I want the same energy from everybody that votes to vote all the time.
Yeah.
I want to look at, you can look at publicly, you can look at voter records. Mm-hmm. I can put your name in and find
yes,
out
sir.
When,
mm-hmm.
what years you voted. Now, I can't see who you voted for, obviously,
sure.
but I can see when you went to the polls.
Right.
And I look at my dad's voter record just all the way down the line for a local bond issue was the only thing on there, and he's there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I want that energy from everybody.
Yeah.
If you're going to force it to me this year, Facebook and Twitter,
yeah.
Instagram, force it to me every year.
I'm with you.
Not just in a presidential election, because they're all important.
I'm so glad you brought that point up, because I actually thought about that as well. It's like, is this going to be a one-time cycle where all this energy is given? And then, because let's just, it's pretty obvious. One reason that a lot of people are getting riled up, as you pointed out, indirectly, is because Trump. I mean, let's just be honest. Everybody, yes. Even Trump supporters know this. Is that that's part of the reason why there's a swell for more people to register and vote, as you said, to indirectly basically say to vote him out. At least that's the perception that you get. And so, you know, if you wait for, if Trump gets reelected, well, he can't get a third term unless something changes. He gets 2 terms, 8 years, he's done no matter what 4 years from now. If he doesn't get reelected, my point is that in 2024, he won't be on the ballot.
Yeah.
So at the next presidential election in 2024, let's say it's, I don't know who's going to, let's say it's Mike Pence running against, I guess, Kamala Harris, okay? Could be the VPs running against each other. I don't know. It'll probably be somebody else that'll be running. But whatever the case may be, because I don't think Biden, I don't know if Biden's going to be running when he's 82. Maybe he will be. Yeah. I have no idea. Topic for another day. But in 2024, do you think there's going to be as much passion as there is in 2020? And there's no way to know that, obviously. But I would say that the odds are this is a big swell in regards to voting. People are excited or they want to vote. There's an urgency to get registered to vote. There are a lot of people in various parts of this country with platforms that are encouraging people to vote more than ever before. But as you said, my question is, what happens? You mentioned 2 years from now. I'll go even further, 4 years from now, the next presidential election. Mm-hmm. Is there going to be the same turnout? I will be willing to bet you there will not.
Yeah.
I'd be willing to bet you this will be the crescendo.
Because no matter
and
what
like
happens.
20 years from now, we'll look back and say 2020 was the best voter turnout in the history of the United States of America when it comes to voting. Now, numbers will always change because of population growth, but I'm talking percentage of turnout. I would bet you that 2020 is going to be the best maybe of all time, and 20 years from now, it'll still stand. And I think that might be, I agree with you, it'd be unfortunate. Now, I guess one thing that you could say is if you have less people that are voting, does that mean more people are satisfied with whatever's going on now to where they don't vote? So is there a correlation? There perhaps there is.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. But that's a great point you brought up is, and I'm with you. I'm like, if you're a young person voting, or if you've never registered to vote, or you've always never voted, but you've been registered, now you're suddenly in all urgency and you're going to vote today. You're like, I got to vote. No matter what, it's a priority. I'm going to vote. Keep that going. Keep that going, because as you said, every election is important, especially at the state and local levels.
Yes.
People get all caught up in the presidential level. It's really, really important to vote. You have much more of an impact at the state and local levels. That's where you see things that affect you every single day. When your property taxes go up, that affects you, correct?
Yes.
That's not determined by the president.
No.
Okay? When your sales tax rate goes up on groceries or whatever, that is not determined by the president. Okay, you've got a county commissioners, you've got city councilmen, you've got your governor, as you pointed out, which is a pretty big thing in your state. Obviously, with what's happening to COVID-19 now, that the next time we vote for governor could be a gigantic thing. So you're absolutely right. We should have that same passion or close to it in future elections, which guess what? That's the thing I don't like. Hey, we got another one in 2 years.
It's just a not never the presidential. Cycle.
It
mean,
is.
You think like... Oh, because I see a bunch of people. I can't wait for the election to be over for all these posts to be gone on social media. Well, it'll be gone for 6 months.
Yes, and then the next election will people reposition for the next election.
You've got to be ready. You got 2 years basically for a presidential election, because in 2022, those things will start sorting in again and getting going again for the next 2 years, like it always does. And especially in a year where there'll be a new, no matter what happens, a new Republican that'll be up on the ballot.
I will never forget this until I probably die or lose my mind. Senator Jerry Moran was right where Dusty's sitting. Did an interview with him so many years ago. I don't know if he was senator yet. He might have been. I think he was. Anyway, I'll never forget. And this was recorded, and I've got the cut. I should pull it up. And it stood out to me, and he said this publicly. And I haven't really heard other ones say it publicly. Maybe they have. And he said, and this was back... Gosh, that was at least 4 or 5 years ago, at least, if not more. So I think things have obviously changed even more so now in 2020. He said during a 4-year cycle or 4-year term for a president, there are 9 months where they legitimately get things done.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that for a second. 4 years is 48 months And he said there's basically a 9-month window to really focus on getting things done. You know why? Because after basically even Dusty said 2 years from now, in some cases 3 years before the next presidential election, people are already jockeying about, well, first of all, you got 2 years from now with your governor races and everything else. It's all about jockeying for position and getting reelected. So you focus on doing your job for a short period of time, and then guess what? It's just a vicious cycle. I got to get reelected. What do I got to do? Let's put a bill together, and I can say I got this in a bill that helped my state, even though it has nothing to do with healthcare. You know? Hey, it helps the oil and gas industry. What's that got to do with healthcare? Well, I got this for my state. Well, then you brag about it. And you try, because they ain't doing what's best for you, per se. They're doing what's best for themselves to get reelected, which may be good for their state in particular, or whatever the case may be. And that's what really stood out to me from Mr. Moran so many years ago. He said there's basically a 9-month window to really legitimately work together to get things done. Think about that. What 9 months out of, that's not even 25% of a 4-year term.
No.
That's, what is that, 20%? 9 divided into 50 to 48 is 19%.
Yeah.
And I would guess that's even lower now. So that's something to put in perspective. Yeah. That's coming straight from a politician that is not running. He is already there.
Yeah.
So he has some insight into this. That is disturbing no matter who you end up voting for.
Yes. You know?
Okay, so get out and vote. That's what we're trying to say. Billy Tubbs passed away at the age of 85 the other day. I want to close with this comment. Bill Self, of course, is from Oklahoma, Edmond, Oklahoma. He was a high school, I think he's high school basketball player of the year in Oklahoma in a certain classification. Of course, he learned under Eddie Sutton. He learned under Larry Brown when he basically was a graduate assistant coach there at KU. And of course, now Bill Self, the head coach of the KU basketball program. But he certainly followed and knew Billy Tubbs pretty well. Here's Bill Self on Billy Tubbs, who passed away, who was a great coach at the University of Oklahoma. And many people, I disliked him because of maybe people saw him as arrogant or cocky, whatever the case may be. But he certainly was a character. And he was a voice in college basketball. Here's Bill Self talking about Billy Tubbs and his legacy.
Being from Oklahoma, there's three men that brought basketball to Oklahoma. You know, Mr. Iba did back in the earlier years, but from a popularity standpoint, you know, Wayman Tisdale, Nolan Richardson, and obviously Billy Tubbs. They did more for basketball in our state in the modern generation than anybody has. And he was one of those guys that you loved or you love to dislike. And I know Kansas fans have had their moments where they certainly disliked. What did he do, have his team cut down nets here after winning the Big Eight one time? And he had players at Colorado wear the foam finger to make sure that the people knew they were saying number one instead of maybe something else. I know when UNLV introduced their starters, they did the fireworks show, so he got everybody sparklers when he took his TCU team to play there, and they ran through the sparklers, you know, during pregame introductions. And I could go on and on about so many things he did that created controversy and interest at the same time. Who would ever forget what he did with Missouri and Norm Stewart and when he got on the microphone and said, hey nobody... Nobody throw anything else on the floor, no matter how bad the officiating is. I mean, he did stuff like that all the time. You just can't help but like him. That's a man that created a lot of memories for a lot of people.
Bill Self reflecting on the passing of Billy Tubbs, Oklahoma coaching legend, passing away here recently at the age of 85. Thanks for tuning in the Sports Ticket. Have a great day, and no matter whether it's the people you vote for, the people you don't vote for that end up winning tonight or today, just remember, one, no more political ads for a while. Yay! Two, the sun will come up tomorrow. At least we hope so.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.